some degree, and we're going to start this morning with 2307, and I want to do an overview of that particular piece of legislation, and then do 2309, and what we're trying to do right now is make sure that we have all of the amendments that are on people's radar screens collected for the committee so that we'll have a chance to look at those issues. So, Gwen, are you going to do the overview? Okay.
Would you like me to speak to
07
and 09?
Yeah, I think you will. We'll do a public hearing on both 07 and 09. And
thank you, Chairman, as members of the committee. I'm Gwen Dayton. I'm General Counsel for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, but I'm speaking today as a member of the Senate Bill 104 Committee and on behalf of the 104 Committee. I will start with a discussion of House Bill 2307. We have provided, there was original testimony that was provided at the last hearing, and then there's also a section-by-section analysis that I also prepared of this bill. I will not go through this necessarily section-by-section, but first start out by talking about generally what we were trying to do. House Bill 2307 amends ORS 179-505. 179-505 is the parallel statute, in my mind, to 192-525. 192-525 was repealed in House Bill 2305. As you may recall, that was a statute that deals with medical confidentiality for providers. 179-505 addresses the public sector. It addresses entities covered, addresses public health institutions and private institutions that contract with the state to provide public health services. 179-505 deals with generally specially protected records, provides greater protection for records than did 192 because these are records that typically warrant that kind of protection. The 104 committee found that 179-505 could stand. It did not need to be repealed like 192-525 did, but there were two major issues to deal with. First, there were inconsistent terms in 179-505, terms that didn't make any sense after HIPAA. Not necessarily substantively incorrect, but just would create confusion. And so the committee set about removing those terms and substituting HIPAA terms. Second, and this is not particularly a HIPAA issue, there was some confusion, or rather concern, in the provider community as to the breadth of 179-505. There was an amendment made in the 2001 legislative session as part of the reorganization of the Department of Human Services that basically said a provider under 179-505 is anyone who contracts with the department. Well, of course, all hospitals and many physicians have Medicaid contracts, and the concern was perhaps by merely having a Medicaid contract, all your records are subject to the protections provided in this section or this statute. That was not anybody's intention. And not everybody interprets it that way, but just to clear the air and make it clear what the scope of the statute is, it was amended to more clearly define who a provider is under this statute. So with that, I'll do a brief run-through and answer whatever questions you might have. Section 1 is just housekeeping. Section 2 is the major section of the bill. It amends 179-505 to define terms. Once again, we're using HIPAA terms as much as possible, word for word, comma for comma. That was certainly our intent. There have been amendments to those definitions to further clarify and ensure that we are reflecting HIPAA. As you can see, there are also clarifying definitions on who qualifies as a provider, reflecting the concern I just discussed. 2 through 7, and virtually the majority of the subsections are amended to eliminate organ-specific terms and rather use HIPAA terms. You'll see guardian is removed and personal representative is inserted. Personal representative is the HIPAA term. Consent is removed. Authorization is included because that is the HIPAA term. Notably, in subsection 17, section 2, subsection 17, we include a reference to psychotherapy notes and the special protections that are given to them. Psychotherapy notes are a HIPAA term. Psychotherapy notes are a very small subset of mental health records. It was the feeling of the committee that if we didn't include the special protections that HIPAA gives to psychotherapy notes, that those who are implementing the statute would think that they could be treated the same as any other mental health record. They cannot. And that is why the committee decided to write in the HIPAA requirements for psychotherapy notes in this statute. The other, we were just trying to avoid traps for the unwary. That was one of our major goals, and this amendment was in pursuit of that goal. Section 3 amends a different statute to substitute HIPAA terms as necessary. And then Section 4 states how the Department of Corrections may use and disclose inmate health information without authorization. This was inserted at the request of the Department of Corrections to clarify what they may and may not do, and the Senate Bill 104 Committee was happy to accommodate that. That section does reflect HIPAA requirements, or HIPAA permission, rather. And Section 5, of course, is the emergency clause reflecting the April 14th HIPAA compliance date. We would like to have these clarifying amendments prepared and enacted before hospitals and others try to implement them. That's a very quick review, but I don't want to take more time than is necessary. I'm happy to answer whatever questions there may be on this bill.
All right. Is Mr. Lane in the audience? I just want to see if he's there, bring him in, and I want to see if he's got comments on this particular.
And I, Chairman, I cannot speak, of course, for Mr. Lane, but I can tell you that members of the 104 committee met with Mr. Lane, representing the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, subsequent to passage of this bill on the House side. And Mr. Lane did have some requests for amendments to the definitions, and I think we're by and large fine with those. I'm not certain if those amendments have been implemented. I haven't seen them.
Right.
But to the extent that they have concerns with the definitions, I don't think there's controversy.
We do have some A3 amendments to 2306, but I don't think
I haven't seen them on 07, and but I don't think there's controversy about it. I'm happy to have him express those if
he
wants.
Mr. Lane, if you could come forward. Just on 2307, I wanted to find out if you have issues or if you want to highlight some things for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I received a.
Just state your name for the record.
Richard Lane for the record. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Here on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, and we have submitted opposition material to 2307. I can talk to the committee briefly about the objection, and perhaps it could be clarified so that there is no objection. I would also note that there have been circulated among members participating in the bill review, and in that last submission that was circulated, many of the proposed changes that had been discussed informally on the House side are incorporated into these amendments, and we...
I'm sorry, which amendments are you speaking to?
Maybe I can...
Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. There are 2307A amendments that Holly Robinson will be drafting. It's my understanding that they will be available on Monday. It was simply an oversight that those did not get drafted with the other A3 amendments that you're looking at now on 2306. And 2305. There will be, as I understand it, not any amendments to 2309. I haven't seen any if there are. I can print up the committee copies of the 2307 amendments while Mr. Lane is speaking.
Okay, why don't you do that?
And Chairman, as I believe I have those in kind of informal amendments in front of me, and I don't believe we have any objection to those. I think they reflect our conversation with Mr. Lane previous to this hearing.
Okay, what I want to do is make sure that we're all talking about the same thing, so we get those amendments to the committee, and we'll talk and get everybody on the same page. That's okay. Does the committee have any questions or issues?
Mr. Chairman, if I may,
sure.
The chair requested some sort of an analysis on the series of bills. I stapled them together. I'm going to hand them up, and there's a 2307 that might aid us at this point.
All right, if you could just give them to the staff, they'll distribute them. So do you have specific issues with 2307 you want to talk about?
Mr. Chairman, I do have specific concerns about the applicability of the psychotherapy note provisions inside of 2307. In the matrix that is being handed up to the committee members, C six pages in.
Okay. And the pages are not numbered?
It's titled up at the top, House Bill 2307A engrossed.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for providing this, Chairman. It's helpful.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on 2307A engrossed, we provided the committee a section reference and a page reference regarding the A engrossed bill.
All right.
Psychotherapy notes are treated differently than general protected health information under HIPAA. And 2307 is the only bill that raises that distinction. It defines psychotherapy, and it also indicates how those records may be disclosed. And on our review of 2307, the dovetail between 2305 or 2306, which has to do with healthcare providers or health insurers, fails to make the distinction between psychotherapy notes and general protected health information. So what's missing is a tie-in between those two so that anybody who is reviewing what may become Oregon law realizes there's a distinction between those two subsets of information and that there's a heightened protection afforded to psychotherapy notes. And that's the overall objection.
So your objection is not the inclusion of that heightened protection. It's the connectivity between the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is correct. And on the definition of psychotherapy notes, I attached behind 2307 the actual definition of psychotherapy notes from the HIPAA regulations. You'll note in 2307, section 2, page 2, line 27, it refers to psychotherapy notes kept in the course of official duties. That term is not a HIPAA term. That seems to be a limitation on the protections afforded to psychotherapy records.
All right. It's the use of the words official duties.
In the course of official duties.
Gwen, do you want to respond to that?
Sure, Chairman, as members of the committee. First, as to technical issues relating to the definition of psychotherapy notes, excuse me, it's the opinion of the 104 committee that the existing definition is sufficient, but we don't object to changes recommended by the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. I don't think they necessarily change it substantively, but we're not interested in arguing over small points. The larger point is the connectivity between inclusion, as I understand the question, and I hope that I am addressing it correctly, including a reference to psychotherapy notes in 179.505, which, as I just indicated, has a more limited applicability. 179.505 applies to public providers as opposed to all providers broadly. Including it in 179.505, but perhaps not elsewhere, poses a problem in some manner. Let me address that. This is a very similar issue to what Mr. Lane raised at the last hearing. First, the 104, maybe reiterate the broad approach that the 104 committee took to drafting legislation. If Oregon law was silent, specific Oregon statute was silent on an issue, like 192.525 simply doesn't address treatment of mental health records. It's a much broader statute than that. We didn't want to change things where HIPAA could stand alone and service the law of the land without any confusion, without any conflict. And that is the case with psychotherapy notes broadly among all providers. We included it in 179.505 only because that statute addresses the treatment of mental health records. And we wanted providers that are looking at this to know that, by the way, HIPAA creates a subsection here that you need to make sure that you're aware of and don't just comply with state law as it reads, hook, line, and sinker, but rather understand that there are additional provisions. That's why we put it in 179 and not in the general provider.
So you didn't put it in the general privacy provision.
But it stands, I know, and this is the product of months and months, in fact, years of work. And so I understand why coming into this can be somewhat difficult. But that We didn't feel the need to include that in Oregon law broadly because it is in HIPAA. It is the law of the land. We put it in 179 only to avoid the appearance of or to avoid a trap for the unwary.
All right. But does HIPAA, with respect to psychotherapy notes, apply broadly?
Yes. HIPAA applies to all providers.
Chose, right, but chose not. So Mr. Lane's point is well taken. I mean, it ought to be connected, wouldn't you think? I mean, it ought to be clear
sure.
that it applies to all of these broad categories, not just the sections under 179 or public health.
Chair Minnis, right. It's the belief of the 104 committee that HIPAA applies to all covered entities, and that is most providers. And if there is no conflict or confusion with HIPAA in other areas of Oregon statute, we did not amend or add to them.
Right.
When there was confusion or conflict, we did. The same argument applies to Mr. Lane's more broad argument about inclusion of HIPAA patient rights. And there are extensive patient rights provided for in HIPAA that have no parallel in Oregon law. And rather than write all of HIPAA into Oregon law, which poses many problems that we can discuss if you'd like, we let federal law stand alone when there is no parallel or conflict in Oregon law, as we do with drug and alcohol records. There are special protections for federal protections for drug and alcohol records. There are, there are many, many, many federal laws that we do not write into Oregon law because they stand alone, and we all comply with them. Attorneys that work in the area of healthcare know that. That's just the way the law works. And so when we were looking at Oregon law, we did not write all of HIPAA into Oregon law where there was no conflict with Oregon law. And that basic philosophy applies with psychotherapy notes as well. We included it where there was a potential conflict or confusion, and that was in 179.505. We're not arguing it shouldn't be the law in Oregon. It is.
All right. So you don't dispute that it applies.
Of course.
You're saying that it applies based on federal law.
Absolutely.
We ought not repeat that.
Absolutely.
Mr. Lane, you want to respond?
My response is you are now putting it into Oregon revised statutes, and you're limiting its application to a certain class of providers as defined in 2307. The health care services provider on page 2, line 7, is the only defined group subject to the disclosure requirements for psychotherapy notes under the disclosure provisions on page 6, line 5. Had that definition been broader to be covered entities, I think the tie-in would be correct to how psychotherapy notes need to be treated by all people that possess psychotherapy notes.
Hmm. All right.
Chairman, my response is legally that is not what we are doing.
Right. Okay. But right. And you're, Mr. Lane, you're suggesting that by putting it in the statute under 179, that you're creating a distinction for the purpose of Oregon law, even though federal law applies?
You're setting up the trap for the unwary that they may not believe that the certain heightened restrictions for psychotherapy notes disclosure apply only to those defined health care services provided when they apply to a broader scope.
All right. Okay. Senator Brady.
You're not arguing that the amendment that Mr. Lane proposes would do any harm to the bill.
Chairman, Senator Burdick, let me clarify what amendment is being proposed, because the amendments to clarifying the definition, the ones that I have in this sort of informal engrossed version, merely add to the definition of what is a psychotherapy note or when it can be disclosed. That's fine. I don't have any amendments from Mr. Lane that may provide for a broader applicability of the psychotherapy note provision. He's discussing something now that has not been included in any proposed or formal amendments. And so, yes, I can say in the amendments that they are proposing pursuant to this modified engrossed version are fine. If we're talking about removing the term healthcare services provider that is currently in the bill and not subject to amendment before you today, and using some other term, I would object to that, but that's not before you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, that's correct. The materials that have been handed up and we've referred to, and I think Mr. Joseph provided the committee, were the work of some meetings, and that's an agreed document. Those amendments have been cleared by everybody concerned with it. What my objection remains, and which the proponents disagree with, is the issue that I posed this morning.
All right, so the
follow-up, what would be the harm in doing it to broaden it to cover covered employees?
Chairman and Senator Burdick, if you were to remove the term healthcare services provider and insert covered entity in 179.505, you would create massive confusion because 179.505 does not apply to all covered entities. It only applies to a subset of them, that being public providers and private institutions with public contracts. And so it would be just inappropriate drafting, in my opinion, to try to include that in the middle of a section that doesn't apply to, in the middle of a statute that doesn't apply to this other group of people. You would have to draft a completely different statute, in my opinion, if you wanted to deal with Mr. Lane's objection.
Okay.
Chairman, is Senator Burdick, the other way to skin the cat, if you will, is to take the disclosure section from 2307 and put it in 2305 and 2306, thereby incorporating it over there with healthcare providers and health insurers as they're sort of structured out.
Okay. That or I'm suggesting, well, it's just, we had a discussion about not citing the HIPAA regulations, but I've actually seen other bills that do cite the HIPAA regulations.
Chairman, I can address that if you'd like.
Sure.
There are issues with citing federal law. There are constitutional delegation problems with saying HIPAA, you know, 42 CFR Part 164 is the law in Oregon. That's a delegation problem, constitutional delegation problem. But that having been said, I understand the concern or the perhaps the suggestion that we in some manner reference HIPAA. And that's consistent with the 104 committee's philosophy of avoiding traps for the unwary. So if you'll note in my section by section on House Bill 2305, in Section 1, which is the policy section, I included some suggested language that says, I don't have my 105 written, but yeah, thank you, that we add to that policy section language that says, in addition to the rights and obligations expressed in Sections 1 to 7 of the Act, which is, which is 2305, the Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act for privacy regulations, including the site, establish further rights and obligations regarding use and disclosure of protected health information and the rights of individuals regarding their protected health information. I think that's appropriate to include. If we want to make sure people understand where they can go to seek further, Mr. Lane is asking that we also include Part 60. If you want, that's just definitions. That's a technical point.
So you'd be fine with that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on my section-by-section analysis for 2305A on Section 1, States Protection Policy, I made a suggestion to the committee that the reference could go there, so I think the parties may have found common ground.
And, Chairman, if I could add, that helps us with this, the bigger picture problem that Mr. Lane is raising, that 192.525 applies to providers generally, and so that reference to HIPAA would apply to public providers as well, hopefully would be helpful to them in their compliance. That's our goal. We just want to make sure everybody knows what to do.
Right. I think that's hopefully Mr. Lane's objective too. So what you just read from, where is that located in any of our documents, by the way?
That's in my section-by-section analysis of House Bill 2305.
Okay.
Should be the first attachment to the memorandum I provided to the committee.
First attachment to the memorandum provided by Mr. Joseph, which is buried here somewhere. And that attachment is on 305, this section? Section?
What section again, Glenn?
Section 1.
In Section 1.
Yeah, that's the policy statement. And the way it's written now, there's just a policy of the State of Oregon 1, 2. That now it should be subsection 1,
right.
Little a, little b, and then subsection 2 if you want to take the language as I drafted it.
All right, and you were adding what additional language is Mr. Lane's?
Oh, he wanted to include, my citation is for 42 CFR Part 164. He wants to say Part 60 and 164. Yeah, that's fine. I looked at that issue. I didn't think it was necessary, but I don't care either.
Okay, fine. Say it again for the record so I've got 42
CFR Parts 160 and 164.
160 and 164.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. And you're both agreed on that then?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. Any other questions by the committee? Any other issues, Mr. Lane? We're trying to give you the benefit of the doubt. I'm actually trying to redeem the time here because of the 14th deadline here. So,
as far as the concern raised in that particular objection, there were a couple more on 2305. I'm I don't want to be jumping around. I'm done with 2307.
You're done with 2307. Okay. So include this language in 2305. You're fine with 2307 as it stands, correct? So no amendments to 2307 as long as this language in 2305 is included, correct?
That'd be correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Great. So, yeah, this raises some interesting rules issues for me here. This is going to drive the Secretary of the Senate nuts. But close the public hearing on 2307, 2309. We're going to go to a public work session on 2305. Now, I'm going to ask the committee to suspend the rules for the purpose of adopting a conceptual amendment.
Ooh.
Now, I'm going to just follow my lead. Secretary of Senate will be fine. Anyways.
Secretary of Senate, do you read us?
Yeah, she's fine. Senator Burdick, being vice chair, he would make the motion to suspend the rules.
Mr. Chairman, great jeopardy, I move the conceptual amendments.
No. You move to suspend the rules.
I move to suspend the rules.
Correct. Senator Burdick moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of dealing with an amendment in Senate Bill 2305. Conceptually, it will be based on the documents provided by legislative staff or committee staff. Is there any objections to suspending the rules? No objections. Okay. Senator Burdick?
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the conceptual amendments to A and Gross House Bill 2307 as presented to us by the staff.
All right, and for the record, Senator Burdick moves that we adopt a conceptual amendment, which appears on the...
We're in 2305.
Section by section.
2305. No, we said 2307.
2305. That's right. The motion is with respect to House Bill 2305. That's the work session we're on, and we're looking at the section by section analysis over the committee, and I'll read into the record that the conceptual amendment would be a new subsection 2 in Section 1, that would read, in addition to the rights and obligations expressed in sections 1 to 7 of this Act, comma, the Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act Privacy Regulations, comma, 42 CFR Part 160 and 164, comma, establish further rights and obligations regarding use and disclosure of protected health information and the rights of individuals regarding a protected health information, period. Everyone clear on that? Is there any objection to the motion? There's no objection. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2305. We'll open the public hearing on 2307, 2309. Thank you very much for your indulgence. All right, 2309.
Thank you, Chairman. As members of the committee, again, Gwen Dayton speaking on behalf of the Senate Bill 104 Committee and serving as counsel for the Hospital Association. House Bill 2309 amends Oregon statutes that are not necessarily directly preempted by HIPAA but pose sufficient implementation, either confusion or problems under HIPAA, that the 104 Committee felt it was appropriate to amend them. Before I describe the statutes that are amended, let me first express a general HIPAA tenet that was driving the amendments to these statutes. Under HIPAA, providers and other covered entities are allowed to release information if it is required by law. So if state law says you must do this, then you are allowed to under HIPAA without any level of patient permission. So we have several statutes in Oregon law that involve the disclosure of protected health information, but that disclosure is not mandatory under state law. So the 104 Committee recommends that you amend ORS 125-150 to clarify that now under HIPAA, the court visitor who is investigating the appointment of a guardian pursuant to that statute and interviewing a covered entity such as a physician must obtain patient authorization or court order. And the language that is in the amendment was regarding court order was suggested by attorneys representing the elder law section of the bar, so we have some confidence that this language does the job.
Help me understand. The amendment that you're speaking to is where?
The amendment, I'm sorry, it's in the A. and Gross version of the bill. It's in the bill. I apologize. Yeah, these are amendments to the statute that are said.
All right.
So we didn't change the law, we just inserted the HIPAA requirement to avoid, as we are trying to do, traps for the unwary and preserve the rights of protected persons. Section 2 amends ORS 676-260. This is a statute that allows but does not require a health care provider providing care in a health care facility. We're talking a physician typically or a nurse providing care in a hospital to someone who arrives after a motor vehicle accident, is reasonably believed to have been the driver in that accident, and appears with a blood alcohol level above the legal limit. Currently, under Oregon law, a provider may contact law enforcement on their own initiative and tell law enforcement that this person has a blood alcohol level over a certain limit, over the legal limit. After HIPAA, because this is a discretionary but not mandatory disclosure, there would have to be some level of patient permission, which is unlikely in this circumstance, or court order, subpoena, or other legal process in order to make this disclosure occur. On the House side, the House Judiciary Committee changed the Senate Bill 104 Committee's recommendation to amend this statute and make the disclosure mandatory. And make the disclosure mandatory within five, I think it's calendar days or it could be business days, I have to check. With the making the policy decision that this disclosure is sufficiently important, that we want it to occur without delay, and we want to allow the provider to make the disclosure without legal process or patient permission. That is how ORS 676-260 is amended by House Bill 2309. And there is a subsequent amendment to make it clear that providing that notice does not subject the person who makes the notice to any kind of civil liability.
All right. And that amendment, again, was adopted by the House, correct?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. You have to help keep me clear if there are additional amendments.
Absolutely.
There
no, though, that's in board. The A and Gross version of the bill.
Thank you.
Section 4 of this bill amends ORS 427-235. That is a section that deals with the commitment of mentally retarded people. It has a similar issue to the one with the court visitor in 125-150. The investigator, as part of their work, may interview a covered entity, such as a physician, to determine whether a commitment is appropriate. Oregon law allows the interview of the physician but does not require the physician to provide information. Because it does not require the disclosure, Oregon law should be amended. The 104 committee believes to make it clear that the investigator must obtain some level of patient permission or court order or other legal process in order to get information from the physician. And that is added to ORS 427-235. Section 5 establishes an emergency clause for the same reasons that all the rest of the bills do.
All right. And Mr. Lane, do you have any issues with 2309?
Mr. Chairman, there are no objections to 2309.
All right. Thank you. Great. Committee, any questions on 2309? Senator Ringo.
Thank you. I just really wanted to understand the scheme a little bit better. Currently in Oregon, it is a it's discretionary as to whether the physician will report it, or it's mandatory, but it says within a reasonable time.
Chairman, Senator Ringo, you're talking about the law enforcement disclosure of blood alcohol level?
Yeah.
Current Oregon law says may disclose.
Okay.
And that is being amended to say shall.
And that amendment is not driven by HIPAA?
Chairman and Senator Ringo, yes, it is, because HIPAA would not allow the disclosure of information to law enforcement unless without patient permission or legal process, unless it was mandatory.
I see. HIPAA would prevent disclosure unless that disclosure is mandatory.
Senator Ringo, yes, or either it's mandatory or there's patient authorization, subpoena, or court order.
I see. Was there discussion that that disclosure to law enforcement will be a deterrence to people receiving medical treatment?
Chairman and Senator Ringo, that particular discussion, the chilling effect, did not occur. I can tell you there was extensive discussion about the policy behind the statute and whether we should make it mandatory or whether we should require patient permission or court order, as we've done with some of the other sections, in the House Judiciary Committee. And the not meaning to speak for any particular member, but my understanding is that the policy decision that was made was that there are sufficient, that just these disclosures are sufficiently important that we want them to incur without impediment.
I guess just a comment. As I think the committee knows, I think our state should take a very, very tough line against driving while intoxicated. But I guess I am concerned that people will, if they know that they're going to be reported, that they will just decide not to get medical care even though they may need it. Could you just speak to that for a moment?
Chairman and Senator Ringo, I can speak to that. As a practical matter, many people who come to the hospital after a motor vehicle accident are transported by ambulance and not necessarily making the decision.
They're tied down.
Yeah, this is not a decision that they're making. They're brought in by the emergency medical folks.
Okay.
So those folks, I don't know, would have a chilling effect. I think they would have that imposed upon them. I can understand how somebody perhaps who was ambulatory but felt they might need to be looked at might reconsider that decision in light of their current alcohol state.
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
I mean, are there any studies or is there any data on that?
Chairman or Senator Ringo, I don't know. Not to my knowledge, but there may well be. It just wasn't an issue that was taken up in that level at that level of detail.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Anything else on 2309?
Mr. Chair, no, not on behalf of the Senate Bill 104 Committee.
Okay, let me just make sure I'm doing my due diligence here. You're the only person signed up on 2309, so we'll close the public hearing on 2309. Let's go back now to 2305. Okay. 2305, public hearing, continuation. We have -A3 amendments to that bill. Gwen, do you want to talk about those?
Yes, Chairman, as members of the committee, the A3 amendments are in large part definitional changes. They are amendments that were discussed with the Trial Lawyers Association subsequent to the hearing on the House side, and they are agreed to by the 104 Committee as well as the Trial Lawyers Association. I don't believe they incorporate all the changes that the trial lawyers wanted, but they incorporate some.
All right. Mr. Lane, do you want to speak to the A3 amendments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, as the proponent has accurately stated, following some discussions on the House side, the -A3 amendments were what were suggested changes, and we are in agreement with the -A3 changes. There were other comments raised during those discussions that are not reflected in the -A3s, and I believe the matrix of section analysis provided to the committee this morning, the very first page of that, entitled House Bill 2305A Engrossed, might aid the committee in where we are as far as 2305 is concerned.
All right, let me do this, if I could, and Gwen, if you can bear with me, because I have to try to understand things that we're doing. Trust me, that's difficult sometimes. So, Richard, if you would go through your section-by-section analysis here with us on 2305 and tell us basically where you agree and where you disagree.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. 2305A engrossed the Section 1 State Protection Policy. I believe the committee has just dealt with that momentarily ago.
Okay.
The Section 2 definition of health care provider, I point out for the committee and attach the HIPAA definition of health care provider. This is on page 2, line 25 of the bill. The HIPAA definition of healthcare provider does reference various types of healthcare services providers under 42 U.S.C. 1395 XU, and you've got to go there and you've got to find out who's in, who's out. It's a minor observation that you start listing who a healthcare services provider is in 2305A. You may inadvertently include or exclude those people subject to HIPAA compliance. It is not the end of the world, but I point that out for the committee's
observation, that you're doing something a little bit different than HIPAA.
Okay, Glenn.
Yeah, Chairman, members of the committee, the definition of healthcare provider was extensively looked at on the House side. It was amended on the House side to make it HIPAA compliant. We believe it is HIPAA compliant.
I'm sorry, say that again.
The definition of healthcare provider was amended on the House side to make it HIPAA compliant. We believe it is HIPAA compliant and is not an issue that should delay progress of this bill.
All right. So let's go to Section 3.
Moving on to Section 3, this is the use provision, and with the amendments, strike that, Mr. Chairman. Section 3 appears to reflect accurately the federal protection disclosure rule.
You're fine with Section 3.
Section 4 is the copying charge. There have been amendments made to that. The A3. Three amendment that now accurately reflect HIPAA law, but leaves open the question of reasonable cost-based charge.
All right. And I'm going to spend a little time on this. Senator Ringo, I know that you have an interest in this. Do you want to chat about this now? Or?
I had a brief discussion with legislative counsel outside, and I think for convenience sake, let's just keep moving.
All right. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Section 5 does now, as amended, include the core elements of HIPAA, and we no longer have a problem to Section 5.
Okay.
Section 6 and 6 and 7 I can address together because this is something that we significantly object to. We touched on it when we were together the other day. This has to do with the additional privacy protection afforded to Oregon citizens under Oregon law. HIPAA does not preempt more protection afforded by state law, and we believe that Section 6 and Section 7 should be deleted from the bill should the committee desire to move this bill forward.
All right, let's talk about that. Glenn, if these sections were deleted, what issues arise?
Chairman and members of the committee, the Senate Bill 104 committee has particular, we would be concerned with removal of either section, frankly, but we have the greatest concern with removal of Section 6, and here is why. It would basically turn hospital and physician HIPAA compliance on its head mere days before the compliance date. HIPAA does not impose a consent requirement, meaning hospitals and providers do not have to obtain patient consent for disclosures for treatment, payment, or healthcare operations. That is at the core of the HIPAA privacy regulations. The Humphreys decision imposes a consent requirement. The Humphreys decision, summarizing, was that the physician in that case did not obtain appropriate patient permission for the disclosure he made. And frankly, the physician in that case was dead wrong in what he did. And under HIPAA, he would have had to get an authorization. But the interpretation of the court in the Humphreys decision imposes in the minds of many, and in fact I've been told by the Oregon Medical Association that if Section 6 is removed, they will be advising all physicians that they now must obtain consent for virtually all releases, even though that is not the HIPAA requirement. So we are asking only that this committee say there is not a cause of action in Oregon for breach of confidentiality. There may well be other causes of action, but not for breach of confidentiality, for complying with Oregon law. Oregon law in Section 3 of this bill says when you must have authorization, which is the HIPAA term for consent, and when you don't need to. It repeats in summary form that basic core HIPAA premise. And all we're saying is if you comply with Oregon law, you're not doing anything wrong legally. You're not then subject to a suit for breach of confidentiality, even though you're complying with Oregon law. That's what we're doing with Section 6. Section 7 then says, by the way, we're not trying to create a cause of action in Sections 2 and 3 of this bill either. 2 is the definitional section. 3 is the substantive section about when you have to have authorization. Nothing is eliminating a Humphreys cause of action if you are violating the law. The physician in Humphreys would still be subject to that lawsuit. He should have gotten authorization because his release was not for treatment, payment, or healthcare operations. So that lawsuit would remain, as would a lawsuit for simple negligence, as would a lawsuit for violation of the standard of care, All of us understand that after April 14, the privacy regulations as enacted in HIPAA are going to become the standard of care in our community. So even though HIPAA does not provide for a cause of action expressly for violation of HIPAA, it sets the standards that all providers must comply with. And there will be additional causes of action, even if they are not expressed in this law or in HIPAA, because of HIPAA.
All right, Senator Brady.
Will there be additional state causes of action as opposed to federal causes of action?
Chairman and Senator Burdick, there would not be there would, because HIPAA will become the standard of care in Oregon. And so that's the same cause of action that will be available across the nation in every state, because it will become the professional standard of care in our communities.
Mr. Chairman, it will have to be pursued through the federal channel, not the state channel. Is that correct?
Chairman and Senator Burdick, I don't believe so. It will become the standard of care in Oregon, and we are, in fact, adopting basic HIPAA tenets of disclosure in Oregon law. So I think you would have an argument under Oregon law as well as an argument if somebody negligently discloses information in violation of the law, you have that negligent argument as well.
I'd like to hear Mr.
Lewis. Sure. Yes. Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, I respectfully disagree. I think what the result is as the bill stands right now is that everybody nationwide is going to have to file a complaint with the appropriate office at the federal level, and then the Civil Rights Division would be the entity charged with an investigation and possible enforcement or penalty proceedings if there was a violation of a HIPAA rule. And what we're saying is we can do better than that.
But isn't Gwen correct in that if we state these standards in Oregon law, doesn't that provide access to Oregon courts based on the applicable statutes? I mean, it seems to me you could go directly to court, kind of like the civil rights statutes in 659. I mean, it's kind of set up the same way that you have to go to EEOC first under the federal act, and then you can access federal courts, but under state law you can go directly to circuit court, or you can file a complaint with the Bureau of Labor and Industry. So seems to me you'd have access to the state courts based on this construction here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, I respectfully disagree. And the reason is that the HIPAA standard, the HIPAA rule that we're adopting now, we're saying that is going to be the use and disclosure, says there is no private right of action to go to court for a violation of the federal standard. So if we then remove what state protections are there, you've now dropped down to the federal standards, of which there is no private right of action. Enforcement is exclusively with the Civil Rights Division. I don't believe that you can then access the courts for a violation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we were, because I'm sympathetic with not trying to wrap things into our protective scheme that weren't intended by Humphrey Fritz. In other words, to make it clear that particular position's behavior was a violation, but maybe a lot of other behaviors that may have been included in that decision. I'm sympathetic to that, but I'm also want to make sure that if we have the HIPAA requirement, which would, as I understand it, cover that particular position in Humphrey's, is that correct? You both agree on that?
Chairman and Senator Burdick, if I understand your question to be that the HIPAA privacy regulations and what they allow would have applied to the physician in Humphreys had he been practicing today, the answer is yes.
And Senator Burdick, members of the committee, if you had a HIPAA scheme in place during the Humphreys case facts when they generated, then the physician who allowed the private health information to be disclosed without an authorization would have violated HIPAA. And then the person, Mrs. Humphreys, who was the subject of the protected health information, would be obligated to file a claim with the Department of Human Services. And if the Department of Human Services, well, I think it's mandatory that the Department of Human Services must refer it to the Civil Rights Division. Whether the Civil Rights Division then took on the burden, cost, whatever, of getting an enforcement and then deciding whether the doctor at issue was very egregious and hitting him with a fine or just sort of mistakenly
right.
Egregious.
And I know there's a disagreement between you, but I would be interested in making it clear in this statute that there is a state cause of action. So someone, especially on the inappropriate disclosure of information, whether it's under HIPAA or Oregon law, to make it very clear that there's a state cause of action. And if it's, if there's disagreement about whether it's clear, then I'd like that cleared up.
And Chairman and Senator Burdick, if I can respond just briefly at the risk of going on too much about this topic, I quite frankly disagree with Mr. Lane. Mrs. Humphreys would still have a cause of action under her decision based on the analysis in her case.
But
today,
a cause of action where?
Because.
I know, though, where? Federal court, state court?
State court.
Okay.
I think in the same state, the same court that Humphreys was argued.
All right.
Because what Section 6 says is if you comply with Sections 2 and 3, 3 being the most substantive reference, that you're releasing information either pursuant to authorization as you need to or not, or doing it without authorization as allowed to, that's not a breach of confidentiality. You're complying with Oregon law. The physician in Humphreys did not comply with the law as we've written it. He disclosed information in violation of Section 3. So this protection provided in Section 6 wouldn't apply to him. He would still have this breach of confidentiality argument. Is that because...
Well,
we just
want
to make sure that if you comply with the law, you can't be sued.
I'm going to ask my high and mighty counsel here to help us a little bit, because I think Section 7 has language that I think Mr. Lane's speaking to that says that nothing in Section 2 or 3 of the Act may be construed to create a private right of action against a health care provider or a state health plan. Is that the language you're speaking to that you think puts it in federal court? Or am I not following this very well?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no, I think the chair is on to my problem is that Section 7 eliminates any type of state cause of action, and I don't think you go to federal court. I think you only have that remedy that we've discussed through the Civil Rights Division. I think you're out of court.
You think you're completely out of court?
I don't think there's a court to be had for you.
Okay. Now, okay.
May I respond to your minister?
Sure.
What we're saying in Section 7 is we're not in this bill trying to create an additional cause of action over and above what might now exist. That's what we're saying. So there are existing causes of action.
Mr. Chairman.
The Humphreys decision continues to provide a cause of action. And we're not trying to create something new.
I think the risk of sounding partisan, I think Gwen is correct. This is not creating additional causes of action, but it's also not getting rid of causes of action that are currently in existence.
Yes.
For instance, negligence or a breach of the duty of standard of care. It's just saying here are the confidentiality regulations. For violation of these, Mr. Lane is correct, there's a process to address those. However, there still may be other causes of action apart from this statutory scheme that the person could be afforded.
Okay. Could this be worded better to better state that? I mean, this is the thing I don't like about lawyer talk.
This is very typical language in Section 7 that you often see, especially in detailed regulations like this. But, you could include, I assume, something at the end that says, nor does this abrogate any state causes of action. The problem is that, you know, with the Humphreys decision, I want to make sure that Senator Burdick's concerns address that if Humphreys has been misinterpreted over time, that it's clear as well that Humphreys is limited to the manner to which it was supposed to be limited at the beginning, and that it wouldn't apply more broadly as I think it's been interpreted over time.
I mean, my preference is that we say what we mean as clearly as we can based on PG Bolian.
And Chairman, it's subject to comment from others that maybe we should think about saying something like maybe construed to create an additional or a new private cause of action.
Right.
I mean, that's just off the cuff. Maybe there's folks that can think of some unintended consequences of that.
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. And the thing that I guess would just make as an observation is that I don't think there's any disagreement about what they want to implement. Neither one of them wants to make it allow for a lawsuit for a legitimate disclosure of information. And, you know, Ms. Dayton doesn't want to take away a cause of action for something that's not a legitimate disclosure of information. So I think the goal is the same.
Right.
And the question is, what do these words do? And it seems to me that if there is ambiguity, then that, if we're arguing over this, that in itself means there's a problem.
I think that's a, mm-hmm. that's a detective kind of thing. It makes sense for the obvious.
Yeah, thank you. So, I just think we need to work more on Section 6 and 7 and tweaking the language, and it's not going to be done right now, but maybe one way to go is to just to specify that nothing, that we're not creating a right of action for ABC, but neither are we removing one for things that fall outside of that.
All right. Now, it seems to me that these are kind of the crux issues we're talking about with this whole series of HIPAA bills. Is that correct, Mr. Iyer? There are other major issues that you want to...
Mr. Chairman, on 2306A, for example, the identical language is contained in Section 18A regarding the private right of action.
So when we deal with this, we want to also deal with 2306. All right. I'm going to take a little five-minute break. We're going to recess, and I have to go to the restroom. So. We're back in order here. We're on the record. So any comments made get recorded in perpetuity. Gwen? Richard?
Chair Manners, members of the committee, we have discussed this issue during the break. The Senate Bill 104 Committee believes the language in the bill as it exists fulfills its purpose. It neither eliminates nor creates a new cause of action, and that is our goal. The trial lawyers disagree with us on that premise and believe that their clarification is necessary. We will agree to clarify so long as by virtue of that clarification we don't end up inadvertently muddying the waters even further. Language that has been suggested and has been agreed to by me, but my understanding from comments behind me has not been agreed to by Holly Robinson, are that Section 7 be amended to read as follows. Nothing in Sections 2 or 3 of this 2003 Act may be construed to either eliminate nor create a cause of action against a health care provider or a state health plan. That is acceptable to the 104 Committee.
Holly, comments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me think here. No, I want the words as you wrote them.
He's right. He's the words you wrote are not right.
So eliminate. If you want to say that this does not eliminate or create a private right of action. Mr. Chair, I can probably draft that. I misheard it. You know, the problem with provisions like this, anytime you talk about what a bill doesn't do, you create an opportunity for more confusion. And in some ways, I would argue that that language creates even more confusion than the current language. But I also understand the dilemma. And so, ultimately, it will be attorneys like Mr. Lane who are going to have to deal with the confusion. And I'll just state my concerns that anytime you talk about what it doesn't do, that those words become subject to even more interpretation. And I've been making jokes about the bill also doesn't tell you what time the train's going to arrive at the station, which is kind of how these are perceived. But I also understand the issue, and if the parties can agree, I can write it.
All right, let me do this, at least conceptually. Let's talk about what it is we're trying to do by clarifying the unclear language. We're trying to say that because of Humphers and the mandatory authorization or consent that's required under Humphers, we're trying to overcome that. Is that correct or not?
Chairman, let me perhaps restate that in a different way.
Good.
Humphers, due to the breadth of the decision, imposes a consent requirement for the disclosure of health information.
All right.
HIPAA does not.
Correct.
In most circumstances,
right.
Many circumstances. It does in others. When HIPAA requires authorization, when it does not, is expressed in Section 3 of the bill. It is the goal of the 104 Committee to make it clear that if a provider or a state health plan, because they're included in 2305 as well, discloses information as allowed in state law and inherently as allowed in HIPAA, because state law reflects HIPAA, that they will not then be subject to a lawsuit for breach of confidentiality under Humphers, because Humphers imposes a consent requirement when Oregon law, if this bill passes, does not. Now, there are certain circumstances, and those are also expressed in HIPAA, and in state law when authorization would be required. For example, if a hospital wants to market protected health information, most circumstances, that hospital would need authorization, as well they should. If a hospital, using that example, disclosed information inappropriately without authorization, they would be in violation of state law. They would not be protected by Section 6, and they would be subject to a lawsuit for breach of confidentiality. That is Section 6.
All right, Holly, say what she just said, only differently.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, generally speaking, under Oregon law currently, state law confers consent in the old days, authorization in the new days, was required before a physician or other health care provider could disclose medical information. It is, in fact, probably the assumption upon which all of you operate. You go to the doctor, you go into the hospital, you assume that the information that is being collected about you is not going to go anywhere without your consent. We also, I think, understood in the old world that sometimes information would be shared amongst, sometimes with consent, among insurers and other people that needed it. But generally speaking, we all had this expectation that medical information would not be released without our permission. Under the Humphreys decision, and I think there's also some reasonable minds can disagree as well as agree about what Humphreys said or didn't say. And so I would rather really at this point stay away from Humphreys because I think it confuses the underlying issue here because as a legislative body you can make it's really a policy decision having nothing to do with Humphreys. And that decision, I think, in the universe is what should be the consequences if you have information and you don't have permission, either with an authorization or as federal, state, or federal law tell you should, if in fact you disclose that information without permission. And what Section 6 says, I think, yeah, is that if you disclose it without permission, either implied, i.e. through the state law doors, through a subpoena, whatever, or directly, then you are subject to a breach of confidentiality.
But if you have permission,
or if you're following a state law, or if you have a subpoena and you turn it over, then you are not breaching confidentiality.
All right, Mr. Lane.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and if you do not do it right under HIPAA as of April 14th, then your only recourse is to complain to the agencies for enforcement. You cannot go to court. I want it to be crystal clear that in Oregon, under Humphreys and existing law, if you do not do it right by this section, you are subject to a private right of action.
Okay, Holly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, with all due respect to my colleague, I'm not sure. I don't understand why he's come to that conclusion. I don't agree with it. There's nothing in here that says, there's nothing in this bill or in Oregon law that would say that. Or in HIPAA, as I understand it.
All right, but is there a way that we could write it in law, what he's trying to say, that is, in fact, the law, I mean, what you believe is the law?
Probably.
I know it violates the tenets of the 104 group, and et cetera, I assume, but...
Let's try this. Mr. Chair, what is it that you would like, I mean, given sort of this universe, what is it that you would like to really say?
Well, you know, it seems to me that what we're trying to say is that a person who... is who believes they have a cause of action in state court under some circumstances does have a cause of action, correct? That's what we're saying.
Right.
For an illegal or an improper release of information. So why can't we expressly say that?
Well, Mr. Chair, well, we could absolutely clue. We could certainly say causes of action that existed before the effective date of this act exist on or after the effective date of this act.
Now, Gwen's shaking her head no.
You can say that, but
right.
I would strongly disagree.
Okay, you can say that, but you disagree. Why?
Here's why. What? Right now, if we don't do Section 6 as it's written, a hospital or physician would release information in conformance with state law, in conformance with HIPAA, and they'd be sued for breach of confidentiality. Because the interpretation now is that, and I don't want to get too much into Humphreys either, but it is the interpretation, particularly among the physician community, and it's I have no reason to disagree, that Humphreys imposes a consent requirement on disclosures. State law, if this bill passes, and HIPAA, do not. So
well, that's what I was trying to say by trying to overcome the consent requirement in Humphreys. I mean, we're trying to set a new standard, correct? That says that if you do it consistent with Section 6.
Or Section 3.
Section 3. Okay, now I'm getting confused.
Okay, let me just jump in here. Mr. Chair, if I might say, Section 6, read with Section 3, does exactly what you just said.
Yes.
Absolutely, unequivocally. And I will put that on the record, because that's exactly what it says.
All right. And Mr. Lane just...
in the back? Good.
And I believe hopefully I'm articulating this correctly, and I'm doing this with the goal of trying to clarify the issue so we can solve the issue. I believe what I'm hearing from Mr. Lane is that he wants to ensure that he still has a cause of action if somebody violates Section 3. If one of my hospitals discloses information, you know, for marketing purposes without authorization, or, you know, there's lots of... that there is nonetheless a Humphreys cause of action for that inappropriate disclosure. And that's fine. Nobody is trying to protect any provider from a legitimate existing cause of action. Humphreys would provide that cause of action because the provider would have disclosed information inappropriately. So I think that cause of action exists now. It will exist on April 15th. Humphreys or HIPAA doesn't provide for a cause of action to directly enforce HIPAA, but nor does it prevent any existing causes of action for inappropriate disclosure, as is provided in Humphreys, to continue. So I think, frankly, if you want to solve this problem, you don't look at 6, you look at 7, and you say nothing in Sections 2 or 3 of this Act shall be or may be construed to create a new private cause of action. We're not trying to establish a new cause of action under this, but neither are we trying to eliminate anybody's existing rights.
Okay. And Mr. Lane.
I think that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the chair hit it on the head a couple of moments ago, and I'd just be repeating myself. If you are on HIPAA compliance and state law doesn't provide a private cause of action, then your enforcement mechanism is only at the federal level administratively. And I just want to make clear what everybody seems to be saying is that if you do not comply with Section 3, you are subject to a private right of action.
And I would just add that that right exists under Humphreys right now.
But after April 14th, there's a question about HIPAA's implication on that private right.
You know what I'm going to do? This is a critical area. You're all certified smart members of the bar. Bill Joseph is a certified smart member of the bar. You guys are going to have to go off in a corner and write this thing. Yes, you are, because I'm the chair of the committee. Yes, you are. So go off in the corner and figure out how to write it to say what the hell it is we're trying to say so that it's clear.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. I mean, I just wonder, ask a question for Mr. Lane, whether there isn't some way to take care of your concerns by adding a sentence, by adding a phrase. And I guess it was my understanding during the break that you two were kind of working in that direction.
Chairman, I felt that we were, and that's why I'm somewhat concerned now that the focus has moved from some of that quite simple and I think entirely, while we believe unnecessary but nonetheless agreeable information to be added to Section 7, to say nothing shall be construed to create a new cause of action, which I think had been agreeable to all parties 5 minutes ago, does not appear to be. And I also have to express some concern that Mr. Lane is the only attorney among us who believes that there is an issue with Section 6, and I'm concerned about holding this bill up unnecessarily.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to use my vice chair's prerogatives here.
Perfect.
I heard nothing to indicate that the language that they came up with before is not doable. I think they should go do it, and I don't think we should hold this bill up.
Mr. Junda, you raised your hand to your own peril. You're an attorney too, right? Member of the bar? You want to throw yourself in the midst of this?
I apologize for taking your time. I'm Bob Jundep from the Oregon Advocacy Center, but I find the language in Section 7 confusing, so if we're looking for another attorney who does, here I am.
All right. So you're part of the work group.
Should we get started?
You should get started.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to introduce to the committee my father, who's sitting in the audience right here. He's been a member of the bar 50 years, but let's keep him out of this.
I'm glad you said that because he's still active. I was going to throw him in the middle of this. Okay, and I think that these issues are sufficient to require. What's everybody's schedule at 4 o'clock this afternoon?
I'm in Portland.
You're in Portland.
What's today? What day of the week is this?
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to come back at 5 o'clock this evening for a brief meeting, if you have agreement. So I'm going to recess until 5, Senator Rodriguez. You probably won't be here.
We have a radio program that was booked weeks ago.
Who has a radio program?
Senator Walker and myself.
Which is more important?
We could come back at 4.
Mr. Chair, can I make a suggestion?
Yes, of course.
They can agree in 5 minutes. It is now 10 minutes.
5 minutes. And you think you can agree in 5 minutes?
Yes.
All right,
and
go out in the hallway.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're at recess. 5 minutes. I'm watching my clock. Tick, 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 tick.
Now that is if I.
What's the compromise?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the compromise appears to be the addition of the word new in Section 7, Line 1, which would read, nothing in Section 2 or 3 of this 2000 Act may be construed to create a new private right of action.
All right.
Already written in there. I think, Mr. Chair, I think Ms. Dayton recommended that a moment ago.
Chairman, members of the committee, yes. The Senate Bill 104 committee supports the change.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I also want to point out that that actual identical language was added to 2306 for the same reason, and actually 2306 has the word new action or the phrase new action in it as well. So you'll be consistent.
Oh, God forbid. Okay, listen. So everybody agrees in principle on the record, correct? That's what we're doing.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Because that's the way it's going to come back. And I'm not going to accept any more arguments after that. Nanner, nanner, nanner. Anyway, okay.
Good job, work group.
Mr. Lane, what other issues do you have?
Mr. Chairman, Section 16 refers to the Council on Core Procedures adoption. I don't know that anybody has seen or have. Okay.
Chairman, let me just address that question and members of the committee. I served on the subcommittee that drafted the changes to the ORCPs in response to HIPAA. I believe Mr. Lane's concerns was perhaps these have not been properly reviewed and you are adopting them without that review. I can tell you that the subcommittee for the council worked extensively on these, and it was a diverse group of both trial and defense bar, and developed the language that was agreed upon, and the council as a whole also reviewed and agreed upon the language. So it has received review by those affected by them, and very briefly I'll indicate what they do. The ORCPs are not specifically Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure relating to release of medical records, are not expressly and completely preempted, but as with other laws are confusing after HIPAA. And so what we did with them was we amended them to essentially insert HIPAA, how you subpoena a medical record under HIPAA and state law is drafted out in those rules. And it was agreed upon as being correct by those who subpoena medical records every day. So I hope I can recommend them to you as being.
All right, if I understand correctly, the ORCP, those become operative unless the legislature overturns them, correct?
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Rivas, Mr. Chair, yes. The answer is yes. Those changes were, in fact, already adopted by the council, but they go into effect on January 1, 2004, unless the legislature acts affirmatively to adopt them earlier. So if it was January 104, they would be in effect without any, as they now are, actually, because they have been adopted already by the council. All this does is accelerate the date so that everybody's on the same page at the same time when the HIPAA stuff goes into effect.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I might add, the Council on Court Procedures has already made its presentation, and we did hold a public hearing on those in the House. And I don't know if Teresa was there, but I'm sure that somebody from OLA was there. So I hope that those issues have been vetted already. Although it wasn't looked at in the sense that it was examined with respect to HIPAA, there was a presentation on what the changes are, including HIPAA changes.
All right. Questions, comments, political diatribes, dissertations, et cetera. Anyone else wishing to testify on any of these bills? Now, I'm leaving with the point where we have agreement on the major issues. With respect to the rules of civil procedure, I think those things can sufficiently be changed by council if necessary. So, again, the A3 amendments, if I understand correctly, those are agreeable?
Yes.
Everybody sign to that? So, committee, send your break.
Are you in work session?
Let's do a work session on 5.
Mr. Chair, I move the -3 amendments to House Bill 2305.
And Senator Brady moves the adoption of the -3 amendments to House Bill 2305. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I just had a question whether there were going to be, obviously there's this amendment with the word new, but are there yet other amendments relating to the cost of medical records?
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah.
Chair, Minister, Senator Ringo, the A3 amendments, and I've got so much paper up here, I'm looking for them right now. I believe they clarify that, they clarify that hospitals, providers, and others can only charge, they insert the word only, for costs of deletes labor, so you can't charge for labor, you can continue to charge actual reasonable cost-based cost, as well as postage as necessary. So it limited to some degree what hospitals and providers and others can charge for and clarified so they can only charge for these things.
Question? Sure. Let's say a medical provider hires an outside service, and that outside service charges $50 for 3 records. Does that run afoul of the statute as amended?
Chairman and Senator, clearly. The statute says it has to be a cost-based.
Okay, but there
it's
are...
It's not cost-based.
So if the provider argues... That's what it cost me. I mean, I just paid for an outside service, and they say it cost $50. Your response is no, because that's not their cost, and they can't pass along somebody else's cost.
Chairman and Senator Ringo, certainly, I think that if somebody presented a charge like that to you, say that's not a reasonable cost-based charge.
All right. So the only I really want this clip to record. So the only costs that can be imposed for medical records are the actual costs, not even including labor costs.
Labor fee is removed pursuant to amendment.
Okay. And if a medical provider hires an outside service for copying medical records, even those labor costs cannot be included.
Chairman and Senator Ringel, the term labor is removed from the bill.
All right. And also, there cannot be a charge for a copying service's profits. Those cannot be charged as well.
Chairman and Senator Ringo, the statute is the same way it was in existing Oregon law with some HIPAA additions. You can charge a reasonable cost-based fee to cover any of the following, and as amended, it would be copying protected health information requested by an individual or personal representative, including the cost of supplies. Postage, when the individual or representative has requested that copies of the information or an explanation or summary be mailed.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I'd like to ask Mr. Lane, does this get us where we want to be, or are we still going to have a problem with people, you know, sending that bill for $50 for 3 pages under some other rationale?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, I believe the words may charge a reasonable cost-based fee to cover the cost of any of the following.
Okay.
Remains in the bill, so we remain subject to the interpretation of reasonableness.
Actually, only is put in any of the following is removed.
Okay.
Any of the following is removed and only is inserted to clarify that if the A3 amendments are adopted, it would be you can charge only the cost of copying, which includes the cost of supplies, but not labor, because it's no longer listed.
Okay.
And then 2 would be postage as necessary.
I'm sorry, what?
Postage as necessary. If you've got to mail it, you can charge for that.
Okay. And just to follow up, I mean, Mr. Lane, does this get us where we need to be?
And I just comment, there was a House bill that kind of created a $15 charge for CERM, and the legislative counsel, Holly Robinson, really didn't recommend that approach. But what's your comment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, the word reasonable on Section 4, Line 11, remains in the -83 amendments. Whenever you use the word reasonable, you open yourself up to interpretation of what is reasonable.
And that's
as much as I can offer the committee.
All right. And Mr. Chairman, I mean, the word reasonable has always been in there, but I think Ms. Dayton is saying now that we're adding cost-based, maybe that's the crucial difference.
Chairman and Senator Ringo, I do think that helps.
Right.
I would agree that helps.
In addition, you have this subtraction of labor costs, so
yes.
That seems to be a...
Okay. Well, let's see how it works.
Okay, and then on 2306, a little hearing again on that. If I understand correctly, Richard, looking at your issues, I think we've covered all of the issues.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think it was pointed out that the word new is even in 2306, so I think they are consistent. I think we have no objections to 2306A.
All right. Any other issues?
We did adopt the A3 amendments.
We did.
We have not conceptually adopted new into 2305.
Right. Let's do this. This will send it over here. All right. Senator Burdick moves that we suspend the rules for purpose of work session on 2305. Senator Burdick moves that we suspend the rules for purpose of a conceptual amendment on page 7, line 1, section 7 of the House Bill 2305. Is there any objection to suspending the rules? There's no objection. Senator Burdick now moves, with her consent, of course, that on page 7 of House Bill 2305, A engrossed, line 1, section 7, after the word create A, we insert the word new, so that it now reads, nothing in Section 2 or 3 of this 2003 Act may be construed to create a new private right of action against a health care provider or a state health plan, period. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you, Senator Burdick. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? There's no objection. The motion passes. Please forgive me, Secretary of Senate.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
I'm not sure that we voted on the -3. We went into discussion, but we've not voted.
All right. Let's,
on
for the clarification of the record, you may be absolutely right because I'm obviously moving very fast and I'm getting confused. The purpose of the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move you adopt the -3 amendments to House Bill 2305.
Senator Burdick moves again that we adopt the A3 amendments to House Bill 2305. Any gross. Is there objection? Discussion? Objection? None. Thank you very much. Do we have an A3 amendment?
We do.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, in all of this, we had the conceptual addition to the reference of 160, 164. Was that voted upon
that
by the
committee?
Thank you.
All right, we'll do a work session 2306.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
I move adoption of the A3 amendments to House Bill 2306.
All right, Senator Burdick moves the adoption of the A3 amendments to House Bill 2306. For discussion, any objections? Hearing none. So ordered. Gwen, you have a confused look on your face.
Not unusual these days. Did the chair mean to move House Bill 2305 as conceptually and actually amended?
Not. My understanding that we cannot move.
We're not going to move the bill.
Okay.
No, what we're going to do, so that I don't get myself completely upside down, is I'm going to have Holly draft the amendments for the bill as we conceptually amended it, and we'll approve it one final time. So we're kind of double doing what we did.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There are still amendments on 2307 we have not addressed.
Right.
And we can't address this.
Molly.
Mr. Chair, may I ask, I'm sorry, this has happened rather rapidly, and I just came up, I'm sorry, my name is Molly Burns-Herman, I'm an attorney for Kaiser Permanente and work for the SB 104 committee in an advisory capacity. I think you just moved conceptual amendments to House Bill 23 amendments to House Bill 2306.
Correct.
I'm terribly sorry. I did have some comment to make to those. We did not, at the last hearing, get to the amendments, I'm afraid, before the time cut off.
Right.
And I did have a comment I was supposed to bring forward to the committee on those amendments.
Why don't you go ahead and do that? Okay. We haven't moved any of the bills.
Okay.
What we're going to do is, based on all the work we've done, we'll bring it all back to the committee. We'll have it systematic and in order, and we'll go through each one of them. And so if you have an issue here, let me know.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I may take a minute just to mention one issue, because I think you're bringing them back either later today or Monday. I'm not going to be able to be here, and I committed to someone I would bring an issue in. So if I may go forward on that. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and the committee. With regard to the A3 amendments to House Bill 2306, in a couple of places, the recommendation is to insert a reference to an employer as part of the definition of covered entity. I won't bore you to find that many places it is, although I can do that if you need me to. One of the concerns about this from some of the carriers involved, as well as from the DCBS, although I'm not speaking on their behalf, but I've had this discussion with them about a concern, is that when you start bringing in the term employer into the insurance code, you raise some potentially difficult or at very best certainly confusing issues, because the insurance code, as in most states in our state, is enforced by the insurance division, who has no authority over employers, has no authority over employer-funded group health plans. ERISA strictly preempts the insurance division from even having insurance regulations, which might otherwise be saved under ERISA, apply to self-funded ERISA plans. And even though the suggestion to add employer here is kind of deep in, it's about defining a term, if you follow all the way through 26 pages of defined terms building upon each upon themselves, it gets to a point where the DCBS is charged to create standards for using protected health information, which you derive all the way back to an employer is part of what defines personal information that builds up to protected health information. The statute charges the DCBS with not only creating standards but enforcing them, and that is simply just that is not in the proper context. And we, on behalf of the Senate Bill 104 Committee, did talk about this, about trying not to muddy the waters by using terms like employer in an insurance code where it just did not fit. So, I, on behalf of some other members and advisors to the committee, I offered that we would add it in if it's something that the committee feels still should be in, or the Mr. Lane, who I believe brought this forward, feels that it must be in, would be willing to work something out, because more paramount is, of course, getting these bills passed in a timely manner. I just wanted to bring to the attention that it's really an oddity that we would recommend against.
Sure. All right, Senator. Is there a fix for this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, well, I think there's a fix by taking out the word employer. I'm less concerned about the other terms that Mr. Lane wants to have inserted as part of the definition of entity.
Right. Mr. Lane?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not sure where we're at right now. Those suggestions that were made were HIPAA-compliant terms, and that's why they were inserted there. There was no reservation at the time expressed, and now I understand there is reservation because of the jurisdiction, I guess, of the insurance commissioner. I was trying to be consistent with the HIPAA definitions of a covered entity and the individual identifiable health information of which we're trying to define here. It's all about who's got the stuff that needs to be protected. I don't, you know, if there's a jurisdictional problem, it's not that big of a deal. I think if a problem arises, it could be a fix in the next session, if that was...
Well,
it's not, removing it then codifies a state definition that is inconsistent with the same word under the HIPAA statute.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we've actually already done that because of some other unique elements of our state law. For example, one of the other terms that's a definition of covered entity is health plan. because we already had to use that word in connection with a defined term existing under state law, we don't use health plan as part of the definition of covered entity, which is the HIPAA scheme. It's not intended to indicate a difference. It just doesn't fit. Sometimes that's the way it is with apples and oranges, and I would suggest that the purity of the definition has already been lost. One more word away from it, or in fact all of these, frankly, I don't think does additional harm. If I can make one other point, also another point of confusion is that in the federal scheme, the federal HIPAA law makes very clear, which is the law of the land over all of us, that employment records are not subject to HIPAA. So the PHI and employment records are not subject to the same scheme that they are if they're in a provider's hands. Again, adding in the word employer without then adding in a lot more of the federal HIPAA regulations explaining, well, employer, except for employment records when it's held at, leaves an imperfect solution.
Mr. Lane, what I'm going to suggest is that we remove the word employer.
Very good, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so we're going to have to bring an amendment back. Okay?
Understood.
Thank you very much. So I think given that, I think we've covered almost all the issues.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm terribly sorry to do this. I have one other I just need to make mention of. I believe this, it's all worked out. It's not a problem, but I believe, having talked to Holly Robinson, I need to at least mention before the committee, if I may. If I may, this will be very brief. This is, by the way, contained in testimony, written testimony I submitted on Tuesday. There is a problem with Section 18 of House Bill 2306, particularly with regard to Section 2, in how it intends different from House Bill 2305, but intends to address statutory remedies for statutory private cause of action for violations of these parts of the insurance code and the remedies related thereto. And this is a matter Holly Robinson actually asked for input on from myself. I also conferred with Lewis Littlehales of DCBS. We believe we have, where Holly said she was concerned that the last set of amendments still left a flaw in the remedies section, and we concur, and so we are offering amendments that we believe correct the flaw. It's very technical. I'm happy to go over it quickly, or I can also...
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You may mention for the record,
yes,
that this flaw exists. What I'm going to do is we bring this back Monday. Bill Joseph will have a whole list of the things, the actions of the committee today, the conceptual amendments, and we'll have the actual LC amendments here, and they will proceed through on this issue, on the remedy issue. If you guys would get together and talk and see if you can come up with some consensus language on the remedy issue, then that would be fine. We'll work to adopt them. If not, then I think we'll just move the bill, even if it has the issues based on the time.
Mr. Chairman.
And there is one instrument, and apparently still in the House committee, that has a right related clause if we need to do so.
For the moment, would you like a motion to rescind approval of the Dash A3 amendments of 2306?
No, because we're going to make another amendment that would be
we'll build on Monday.
So it's going to be up to Mr. Joseph here to make sense of everything we did today. And then again, so it seems confusing now, and it is, but we'll bring it back on Monday. We'll walk through all of these things, and hopefully there are no other issues that come up. Because this is oh my God kind of stuff. Okay? But if there is, as far as I'm concerned, we'll deal with that in some other bill somewhere along the line. Okay?
Very good, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Walker.
No one goes home over the weekend and comes back on Monday and says, oh, by the way.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Right. So, we've brought all of the issues before the committee. We think we know where we're at. We're not going to throw any incendiary devices into this on Monday. We're going to walk through it, make sure we all understand what we've done. Mm-hmm. And then we'll move the bills. And if there are additional issues, then we'll work with Senator, Chair of the House Committee, Mr. Williams, to address those in another bill. Okay? Everybody happy?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your indulgence.
Yes.
Yes. Thank
you.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize.
No, it's a clock. I mean, everything.